All right. Welcome. Thanks for coming. This is some crazy amplification for such a small room. Maybe like this. So I know there's a Hanselman talk right in the other slot, so I sincerely appreciate you coming. And welcome to this talk on the opensource.net, .NET Core, Core CLR. I can promise you one thing, there is a demo where we build our own version of the .NET framework, and that's kind of nice, I guess. Not sure you're going to see that in other talks. But basically, this is a story of 19 questions and answers about what .NET Core is, what this whole open sourcing story of the framework and the runtime means for us, and among other things, how you can contribute and influence the way the .NET framework is going to be going forward. My name is Sasha. I work for a training and consulting company called Sella. I'm also a Microsoft MVP. But I'm not sharing any internal knowledge with you, so this is all, you know, open source on GitHub and totally Googleable. So what am I talking about? Basically, I hope some of you, if not all, know because you're here. But in November 2014, just about a year ago, Microsoft announced that they're going to open source two pretty major components of their whole software stack, and that's the .NET framework, .NET Core, and the CLR, the garbage collector, the just-in-time compiler, all the components that make up the common language runtime, which runs .NET applications. And not only is it going to be open source, it's going to be true open source. And when I say true open source, I mean it's not like, say, the Android open source project. So I'm not picking on Android specifically, but that's an open source project where once in a few months, you get a huge block of code dumped on you by the project owner. You had no control over the shaping of that huge block of code. And that's done for obvious reasons. You know, Google want to keep some secrets for upcoming versions of the Android platform. But the end result is that it's not really managed as an open source project. Or the kind of project where, you know, there's just one owner and all contributors work for the same company. And there's no way for you to contribute unless you basically work for that company. So again, that's not the kind of open source we're talking about here. It's been very important for Microsoft from the onset to make this a true open source project. In fact, as a kind of experiment, if you will, even though it's not the first time Microsoft has put some code online under an open source license. It's just that if you've been involved with open source, you probably know it's not enough to be released under an open source license. You actually have to behave like an open source project. And time will tell if that really works in the long run, but it has worked so far. So is this the first time, again, Microsoft has been doing something like this? And the answer is no. Back in 2008, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, Microsoft open sourced MEF, the Managed Extensibility Framework, which is a pretty major component in Visual Studio, for example. It's part of the .NET framework, if you will, but you know, it's a small library, after all, just one dependency injection library. A few years later, Microsoft open sourced the Azure SDK for various platforms, for .NET, for Python, for Node, for PHP. In 2012, ASP.NET MVC was open sourced, and TypeScript came up as an open source project from the very first days. Entity Framework 6 followed along just a couple of years ago. And last year, along with .NET Core and Core CLR, Microsoft also open sourced Roslyn, which is the new generation of C# and Visual Basic compilers. So, you know, there's a bunch of code now that Microsoft put out there under permissive open source licenses, accepting contributions from the community. And there's some surprising stuff as well. If you've ever been into Windows drivers, the Windows Driver Foundation, which is pretty much the way people write Windows drivers, it's the library, the framework for building Windows drivers today for both kernel mode and user mode drivers, that has also been open sourced recently. So, you know, it's kind of like a new Microsoft. People keep telling that, keep saying that. But, you know, again, time will tell if these open source projects will really behave like true open source. Even if not, the fact, for example, that Windows Driver Foundation was open sourced is extremely helpful for driver developers, for people interested in how Windows drivers work, for people interested in Windows internals. There's just a wealth of knowledge where you can see the actual source. That's not all what open source is about, but that's also a valuable part of it. So, you know, I said a couple of times that the .NET framework has been open sourced. But is there really a .NET framework, a single thing that you can really call the .NET framework? And I'm afraid the answer is not really. So for various platforms, for various devices, device flavors, device families, we have different versions. We used to have different versions of the .NET framework. So here's a couple of examples. You have the desktop version of .NET, which also has server components, but I'm referring to the full one. It has WinForms, it has WPF, it has WCF, it has the whole, every component basically that's part of .NET is in that full desktop package. But then you have subsets. For example, we used to have Silverlight. Silverlight was a subset of the framework, and it also had its own runtime. It also had a runtime called back then CoreCLR, which was the Silverlight runtime for Silverlight applications. You have Compact Framework, which is still kind of out there, and Compact Framework has its own runtime. And one final example, you have the .NET desktop framework, but on top of that, you could build Windows 8 applications, which don't have full access to the .NET framework. Even though it is the same runtime, even though basically all classes are there, Windows runtime applications, Windows Store applications can't access the entire API. So that creates, first of all, confusion for us developers. Why can't I use this API from Windows Phone? Why can't Silverlight support this XAML feature? So that's one problem. But for Microsoft, think about it. This is an even bigger problem. They have to maintain this mess. And another way of looking at this mess is like this, as a set of verticals. So basically, you have the desktop vertical, which has the desktop application model, like WPF and WCF. It has the .NET framework underneath, the full desktop version, and it has a CLR underneath. But then on the phone, you have a different application model, and that's fine. No one is advocating that you're supposed to have the same GUI controls in a WPF app and a phone app. Well, maybe some people are advocating that, but that's not the point. The point is that beneath the application model on the phone, you have a different .NET framework and you have a different CLR. And they're not just, you know, theoretically different, they actually have different characteristics. For example, the GC, the garbage collector on the phone, is vastly different from the garbage collector on the desktop, or from the garbage collector in Silverlight. And again, maintaining this mess is hard. It's basically a bunch of forks of the same code base that evolve independently. And it also means innovation is hard, because you have to eventually bring that innovation to a bunch of these verticals. And you know, as Microsoft is trying to expand into Xbox One, which can run .NET code, into IoT devices, which can now run .NET code, and basically into some future devices maybe as well, we don't know about right now, it's going to be increasingly more difficult to maintain a set of verticals. And so .NET Core is essentially a unification of these verticals. Now, you know, if you have 10 standards, the worst thing you can do is come up with another standard that unifies all the standards, because then you have 11 standards. That's what usually happens with standards. But hopefully that's not going to be the way .NET Core is going to go. One nice tenet of .NET Core is that it's going to be cross-platform. So you can use, and we will use, the same code base on Linux, on Mac, on the desktop, on the phone, on ARM processors, on Intel processors, on AMD processors. So basically, again, a cross-platform thing. It's open source, which is a nice addition. But again, most importantly, it's unifying all these verticals. So there's now such a thing as the .NET Core class library or the unified class library, which only has small adaptation layers required for the different runtime flavors. And yes, there are still different runtime flavors. For example, there's Core CLR, which is what we're going to use eventually on the desktop, on the phone, on the server. And there's .NET Native, which has its own runtime, the minimal runtime, MRT, which is for precompiled applications. So just, you know, in a sentence, .NET Native is a technology that allows universal Windows apps, so modern Windows apps, to be compiled down to native code with no dependency on the .NET framework installation on that machine. And that has its own runtime, because it has its own build chain, which is a bit complex. So you still have flavors of the runtime, but at least you don't have separate class libraries anymore. There's no reason to implement the string class multiple times. There's no reason to implement XML multiple times. There's also no reason to implement pretty much anything multiple times, as long as you have, you know, good abstractions and your framework is well architected. There's no reason to have these multiple verticals. And so .NET Core with this unified base class library is going to be, in the future, and maybe even today, the .NET framework that everyone kept dreaming about. And so you'll be able to use the same classes with the same implementation on the desktop, on the phone, on the Xbox, on IoT devices, and so on. So again, what goes where, just in terminology perspective, the .NET runtime, the Core CLR, which is usually called Core CLR, but also known as Cloud Optimized Runtime, also known as Project K. There's been a bunch of code names, but Core CLR is basically the just-in-time compiler, the GC, app domain services, metadata services, debugging services, some low-level components, which are mostly written in C++. And there's also MS Core Lib, which contains some fundamental classes like object and string, and these are partly C#, partly C++. On top of that, the unified class library, so stuff like system XML, drawing, communication, I/O, files. And on top of that, we will still have multiple application models. So there will be the WPF desktop application model, and there will be an application model for phone and Windows, which is actually converging. But there will be multiple application models that are not part of the core library. And third parties will come up with their own application models. So Xamarin have their own tooling for running Windows, for running C# applications on iOS and Android. And Xamarin will have, and have already, their own application model. But in the future, beneath that application model will be .NET Core and not Mono, which is what they use today. We'll come back to Mono a bit later. Another thing is that presently, if you go to GitHub, and we will in a moment, if you go to GitHub and you look at, you know, what sources they've put out there, you'll find that not everything that was planned is already there. It is a work in progress. There's basically a, you could call it a porting project, you can call it an opening up project, which takes existing Microsoft code and prettifies it to be shipped in as open source on GitHub. So for example, you have collections, you have link, you have file system APIs, you have XML. You don't have yet on GitHub some other components, such as, for example, system data. But basically, when everything's complete, when the open sourcing process is finished, we will expect in that core .NET Core repository to have all the components of the .NET stack, which are not application model specific. Microsoft again sometimes called this the .NET Server stack. So it will have stuff like WCF and HTTP and Web API. It will not have WPF, for example. And the main reason is that it turns out it's much easier to make server stuff work cross-platform. It's much easier to make networking, for example, work cross-platform than WPF, which is a major, huge library, parts of which rely very closely on DirectX, and parts of which are actually written in C++ with a direct dependency on DirectX. So WPF is not going this way. But the majority of the .NET stack, specifically the server parts, is going that way, except it's not all quite there yet. This is what I'm saying. How is this thing deployed? So basically right now, if you want the .NET framework 4.whatever, you go to some website, you download an .exe or an MSI file, and it installs a bunch of assemblies on your machine in a central location, right? That's what happens in the global assembly cache. And there is no supported way to kind of bring your own framework, like ship an application with only the subset of the .NET framework that it requires. You really have to install stuff on the end user's machine. And that's a blocker for two reasons. First, you can break stuff when installing on the user's machine. Second, it makes your deployment a bit bigger, more complex, slower. So I guess, you know, as .NET developers, you're aware of this. The .NET core, instead, is managed and deployed as a collection of NuGet packages, small NuGet packages. So, you know, it's not a NuGet package called .NET 4.7, and that has everything bundled in. There's going to be NuGet packages for collections, for XML, for threads, for tasks, for networking with HTTP versus sockets. So there's going to be NuGet packages for everything. There are, at this point already, NuGet packages for everything. And your application only ships with the NuGet packages it requires, obviously, and no global installation of .NET is required. So every app built on top of .NET Core can ship with its own .NET framework. This is a scary thing, but it's also a good thing. So on one hand, obviously, it gives you a lot of flexibility. Deployment is easier. You basically copy files over, and there you go. The app is there. It has exactly the files it needs to run. On the other hand, updates can be tricky. If there's a critical bug in a certain version of a NuGet package, can be trickier to fix. And there's potential disk space issues. If you have 500 apps, each shipping with particular .NET framework DLLs, you're basically wasting space instead of referring them all to a single source of truth, a single copy. So at least on the update front, Microsoft guarantees that there will be a process for shipping critical security vulnerabilities through Windows Update. So basically, there will be a redirect mechanism that will redirect from old vulnerable versions of these packages, of NuGet packages, to new versions pushed through Windows Update. So if there's a critical security bug, your users will still get an update, even if you don't update your app and redeploy. But other than that, you're on your own. So it's up to you exactly which version of what you want. And hypothetically, you could be compiled with one version of system threading and another version of system collections and a third version of whatever, XML. And that might make sense, I guess, for some applications. You really only pick what you need. You pick versioning, and you update accordingly. So that's kind of the story in terms of packages. Let me show you a quick demo. So I hope Wi-Fi is going to work OK. If not, I have these apps pre-deployed. So just, you know, creating a console app. And it's targeting .NET Framework 4.6. Now let me add a NuGet package, a modern NuGet package, which is not actually part of .NET Core. It's a standalone library, System Numerics Vectors. This is a Microsoft NuGet package that lets you use from C# code vector instructions present in modern CPUs. Really doesn't matter what the package is, though. I'm going to install it. And yeah. And here the dependent packages that are going to be installed along with it. So you see system runtime extensions, system globalization, System Resources, Resource Manager. These are all NuGet packages from this new generation, right? These are all very fine-grained NuGet packages, which mean you're only getting what you really need as dependencies. So, you know, I'll let it install, but that's really not pertinent anymore for our demo here. If you look at ASP.NET 5, and there's a talk right now, it's all recorded, by the way, so you can watch that talk later. There's a talk right now about the ASP.NET 5 internal model, and among other things, ASP.NET 5 is also pioneering a new system for managing NuGet packages via JSON files instead of those XML config files that you're familiar with. So instead of packages config, which specifies the NuGet packages you depend on, if I open an ASP.NET 5 app, I didn't create it again because it's just too tedious. An ASP.NET 5 app has a project JSON file, which specifies, among other things, its NuGet package dependencies. Where did this come from? Right. Specifies, among other things, its NuGet package dependencies. And you don't see any .NET Core packages here because these packages depend in turn on .NET Core packages. So if I just expand through the references node, let's pick, say, ASP.NET MVC, and just keep expanding. Eventually, we get down to the underlying packages and their relationships. So you see system collections, system net websockets, system security claims, and system security cryptography X509 certificates. There is a NuGet package for everything. Now, again, you might be thinking, wow, deployment is going to be a mess. There's going to be a million little files. True. But on the other hand, you only ship with the components you need. And that's important for clients. It's also extremely important for the cloud. If you're shipping a cloud app, deploying it with only the set of binaries it needs is going to be a lot faster. It's going to be a lot easier to provision new machines for you. It's going to be a lot faster to move apps from one machine to another. So there's a lot of value, really, in minimizing everything and getting to a point where you only ship with what you need. So we're pretty much halfway through, and the cool parts with building our own .NET framework are coming, don't worry. But first, let's talk about some of the related frameworks, if you will. So, you know, we have .NET Core. Actually, we don't have .NET Core. We will have .NET Core at some point when this whole thing is finished. What happens to the desktop .NET framework, which used to be .NET 4.5, and now it's 4.6? So one thing Microsoft took care of is making sure that .NET Framework 4.6 is a strict superset of .NET Core. So there's no chance, you know, that some API from .NET Core was implemented there, not implemented in the full desktop version. .NET Framework 4.6 is a superset, so it adds stuff like WPF and system drawing and component services for Complus, stuff like that. And this is not open source. These parts are not going to be open sourced either. But they are available as reference source. And this isn't new, actually. Microsoft was providing access to the source code of the .NET framework for a while. It's not under an open source license. You're not allowed to modify the code in any way, but you are allowed to browse it. So has anyone used reference-source.microsoft.com? Just one person? Let's go there. So this is reference-source.microsoft.com. And this experience, this web browser where you can navigate through source code, this is an open source project in itself. So you can adopt that for your own code. If you have external vendors maybe who need to navigate through your source code, whatever. So basically, let's just look for a specific type, system. XML document. So here's the class XML document, and here's the source code for this class. And this whole thing is navigable. So, you know, there's a base call over here. You click that, you get to the base class, which is XML node. And the interfaces obviously are navigable. And you even see source comments. They've cleaned up the comments. They have, I think, an automatic tool which removes words like crap and other words. But otherwise, you're basically looking at the original source with the original comments in it. And again, this isn't new, but you can configure your Visual Studio, and that was available ever since Visual Studio 2008. You can tell your Visual Studio to use these sources while debugging. So you can step into .NET Framework classes. You can place breakpoints in .NET Framework classes. So it's not open source, but it's a valuable thing to be aware of for debugging, for example. So this is reference source. Now going forward, you have this desktop.NET vertical, the desktop.NET framework. And going forward, it's pretty obvious that .NET Core will update a lot faster than the desktop version. So desktop.NET is updated pretty much once a year, occasionally even less. .NET Core is going to have releases and new NuGet packages available probably weekly, if not more frequently than that. But again, hopefully, these two forks will version and kind of grow together. And maybe at some point, the desktop version will not be necessary anymore. But you know, as long as stuff like WPF and WinForms and so on are still used and not open sourced, there's going to be this branch, this version of .NET that keeps on living. Similarly, what happens to the Windows Runtime version of .NET and the Windows Phone version of .NET? It used to be called Windows Store.NET and Windows Phone.NET. So today, these versions are a subset of .NET Core. So the .NET Core has actually more APIs, except for the application model. The .NET Core has more APIs than the Windows Store version and the Phone version. In the future, there will be a single version, the .NET Core version, which powers both Phone and Xbox and all the different pieces of the universal Windows platform. So the same .NET Core we're talking about is going to be deployed to phones and desktops and Xbox and HoloLens and Surface and so on. Currently, it's not there yet. So right now, in a Windows 10 build, you have one version of the desktop.NET framework. In a Windows 10 mobile build, you have its own version of .NET. But again, going forward, the .NET version and the runtime itself will be unified. As a side note, the application model for the phone and the desktop and Xbox and so on is actually converging. So the same way the .NET framework is converging, the Windows and devices group is trying to converge on a single API platform for Xbox and desktop and phone. And with the Windows 10 release wave, they have 85% of shared API surface across phone, desktop, Xbox, Surface, HoloLens, IoT devices, and so on. So at some point, there's going to be a single application model for everyone and a single .NET Core and runtime for everyone. And that would be a lot easier to reason about. And finally, what happens to Mono? So Mono, in case you don't know, is a third-party project which implements parts of .NET, parts of the CLR for Linux, for Mac, for iOS, and for Android. Some parts of Mono are open source, and some parts are closed sourced and commercially available from Xamarin. So right now, Mono and .NET Core have nothing in common. So Mono doesn't use code from .NET Core. But going forward, there's no reason for this. And Mono has already expressed, Xamarin and Mono already expressed interest in just grabbing chunks of .NET Core and replacing with these chunks whatever they have right now. Similarly for the runtime, they're going to take the garbage collector from the Core CLR and they're going to put that inside Mono. And in many cases, it's going to make Mono a lot better. There are some parts of Mono which aren't quite production grade. And by just sort of borrowing these parts from Microsoft, they can make these parts of Mono better. Yeah? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Yeah. which parts of Mono aren't production ready. So the GC, for example, it's, you know, you can use it. It's just, it's not a world-class garbage collector. The JIT is not a world-class JIT. And it's not just my opinion. They basically admitted themselves. So you could build systems on top of Mono. It's just you expect a different degree of certain criteria. You had a question, sir? Okay. So, and finally, this is truly finally for this section, what happens to portable class libraries, to PCLs? So basically, today, if you're building code to be shared across different .NET platforms, you often put it in a portable class library, and you check a lot of checkboxes. This portable class library will support Xamarin iOS and Windows Phone 8, but not Windows Phone 7, not supporting Silverlight, and so on and so forth. With .NET Core, that's not going to really be necessary anymore. So as soon as everyone moves to .NET Core, as soon as all the platforms use .NET Core, any library which only uses .NET Core will be a portable class library. That's going to be a great story. And it's going to be based on NuGet packages, basically. So again, you pick which parts of the .NET Core your app really depends on. Presently, or in the future, if you're sharing code with older platforms, you're going to have to build PCLs, and you have to indicate which platforms you're supporting, because the API sets are not identical. But with .NET Core, this story will be better as well, the story of building libraries, of building packages for the .NET ecosystem. So how are all these open source projects organized, just for the sake of starting to use them? So CoreCLR, first, is a project on GitHub, a repo, that organizes stuff like the GC, the just-in-time compiler, debugging services, low-level stuff. Then you have CoreFX, which is libraries, system XML, HTTP, I/O. Roslyn, the compiler services, are in a totally different repo. And the ASP.NET organization has a bunch of sub-projects in it for MVC, Entity Framework, SignalR. This is mostly an historical fact, boiling down to the fact that ASP.NET was open sourced a lot earlier than .NET Core. So there might be some movement between these repositories, but that's the basic organization we have right now. Just to give you a quick look. So this is the CoreCLR repo, and I've just opened the issues tab on GitHub. So you have 296 issues open. This is usually a good sign, as long as they're also being closed. This is a sign of, you know, activity, community contributions. If you look at PRs, there's 31 open PRs, which are currently pending review. There's over 1,000 closed PRs, closed pull requests, closed contributions. So this is CoreCLR. CoreFX is similarly an extremely active project, lots of contributions, and I have some examples over in the next slides. Now, why should you, or anyone really, contribute to these projects? Why should you take .NET Core, take the CLR, build them, make changes, maybe push these changes back to the community? So here's one example, which I'll show you in a few minutes. Why doesn't keynote found exception tell me the name of the key? I've been asking myself this many times, but my wife, who's also a software developer, she's really been frustrated by this. Like, you know that the key is not present. Why not tell me what key? It's going to make debugging a bit easier. So that's what we're going to do in a couple of minutes, just change the dictionary class so it throws an exception with the key details. So that's just a tiny example of maintenance changes that are simply a matter of preference. Another example, which I've been dreaming about for a while, is changing the priority of TPL tasks. So presently, TPL tasks do not have a priority. They're all just sitting in the same queue. You could have them be priority driven. So when you create a task, you could say high, medium, low, whatever, and they would get scheduled according to the priority. There might be real bugs that you can fix. and maybe even contributor fixes. Just as an example that I also mentioned in my first talk today, the just-in-time compiler, the new just-in-time compiler that ships with Core CLR and .NET 4.6, it had a massive critical bug discovered a couple of days after release. The bug was basically that in some edge cases, in some very rare conditions, you would pass some value to a function and it would get a different value. This is a horrible bug to have, right? It's not a crash, it's silent behavior change, which can be really, really horrible. And Stack Overflow, by the way, the Stack Overflow team discovered that bug. So they were able, the Stack Overflow team, they were able to, within just a few hours, to confirm what exactly the bug was, to identify the source of that bug, and to start communicating with Microsoft openly on GitHub as to whether and where the fixes need to be applied. So it was Microsoft who fixed that bug, but as an example, right, if you discover a bug, you can trace it down to the source and you can fix it. And you don't have to wait for a hot fix by, you know, Microsoft support, and you don't have to wait for a year for the new version of the .NET framework. You can fix that kind of stuff and contribute your fixes back. And in terms of future evolution, in terms of API design, the design of the .NET framework, you now have an opportunity to influence that, and not just in terms of, you know, creating an issue that says, I want this feature. I don't mean that kind of contribution. I mean actively designing the feature, participating in the design, and probably contributing code. And one example of an area where lots of contributions were provided to Microsoft so far is porting for different platforms. For example, the Mac port of the Core CLR was contributed by a third party, not a Microsoft employee. And it was just a few days after this whole thing was placed on GitHub. So let's make Keynote Found exception a bit more user-friendly. So right over here, let me just show you first the file organization. So this is the Core CLR repo, basically. And in the source folder, you'll find a bunch of different components which comprise the CLR. It's not, you know, a single piece of code. For example, if you go to the GC folder, there's a bunch of code for the garbage collector. If you go to the JIT folder, this is the implementation of the JIT. And some of these things are separate projects. So for example, MS Core Lib, which we will be modifying now, MS Core Lib is its own Visual Studio project. Now, presently, some parts of this cannot be built directly from Visual Studio. You have to use a build script that does a few extras. But in the very, very near future, or maybe even now, you'll be able to build this whole thing from Visual Studio and HDF 5 to run your own .NET framework and CLR. So specifically, I opened MS Core Lib CS Proj in this Visual Studio instance. And if we go down to source, system, collections, generic, we can find the dictionary class in here. And on the dictionary class, we can find the indexer. And the indexer, I've already made the change. The indexer used to look like this. If the key wasn't found, it would call a helper method that throws a key not found exception. And the key wasn't part of the story here. So you just get, you know, you get a general exception that says key not found in the dictionary. Instead, I've just patched this thing, just one line, to throw key not found exception with the key details. So could not find the key to string. Obviously, the string should be a resource, so there's an infrastructure for this whole thing, but I just wanted to isolate that change to a single line of code. Now, I can try building this thing, it's just that it takes a while. So I can launch the build, just for you to get a general impression, but we're not going to wait for the build to complete. So it's a batch script called build CMD. And actually, some parts are obviously already built, so it doesn't have to rebuild the whole thing, but it still takes a while. And my MacBook's fan is going to start up in a couple of seconds because it's also building in parallel. So yeah, there's a lot of code. And in fact, after the actual framework was built, the core was built, and so on, you'll see tests being built. And for example, the just-in-time compiler has like thousands of test cases, each of which compiles to a separate executable. It is so tedious to build this thing. But if you look at the current output, you can see that actually MSCoreLib was already built. So we already have the updated MSCoreLib. So I could grab that. Anyway, I'm going to terminate the build. And down here, I have the original MSCoreLib, which was produced by the original source code, and I have the updated MSCoreLib, which was produced by my changes. So I'll run hello exe, which is an application that throws a keynote found exception. Here's the source code. I have a dictionary of strings to ints. I add an element, and then I try to access the dictionary using the wrong case. And I catch the exception and print its details. So this is after my change, actually. System collections generic keynote found exception could not find the key age. If I copy over the original MSCoreLib down here, I need to recompile. So, C Windows, Microsoft.NET, framework V4, CSC, now stdlib, referencing this MSCoreLib, out hello exe, and the source is hello CS. So I can't get my own demo to produce the desired result. Probably the updated version, which I think is updated, is not in. Sorry, the original version, which I think is original, is in fact updated, and I just got mixed the files up, because obviously the original source on GitHub does not have that fix. So I hope you believe me that you know there are really two behaviors here. You know, we have our own version of .NET, but let's take a look at some of the other files. These are just some of the files that you get with the build of the CLR. So other than MSCoreLib, which is part of the CLR repo right now, you also get core CLR, which is the main runtime DLL. This is what used to be CLR DLL, and previously used to be MSCore WKS DLL. You get core run, which is a little tool that you use to launch .NET Core applications. So on Windows, I think you don't strictly need Core Run, but on other platforms you do, and I'll show you on the Mac what it looks like. You get some debugging components like the DAC and SOS. I'll actually show you SOS in a moment. And you get the up-to-date just-in-time compiler. This is the new just-in-time compiler that shipped with .NET 4.6. So I was just saying I'll show you the updated SOS. Has anyone used WinDBG and SOS before? No? So it's not going to be super interesting for you, I guess. But SOS is a debugging extension for debugging .NET applications in WinDBG. And along with the CLR, you also get to build your own SOS. So this is something I've already started thinking about using for providing custom debugging services. So even if you don't modify the actual runtime, the actual framework, you can still modify the debugging services components. So I'm going to show you this if you're not actively using SOS, but just know that this is another part that you can update, that you can tinker with. I'll show you a Mac demo in a moment, but first, how do you contribute your stuff, just in a few words? So basically, the standard GitHub workflow applies. You fork, you branch, you make your changes, you write tests, and there is a very, very big test infrastructure that you can fit your tests right in. And you have to, before you publish your stuff, before you issue a change a pull request, you have to sign a contribution license agreement. Here's what it looks like. Basically, a couple of pages. And what you're saying there is that you really give Microsoft the rights to use your changes, because your changes might also end up in commercial products and obviously in the open source .NET Core and Core CLR. So you have to sign that to get your stuff approved. You only have to sign once, and then there is an automatic bot that will just, it will know that you already signed the contribution agreement. Now, is it really that easy for people to contribute? Is anyone actually contributing? So I've already shown you that yes, but here's just some statistics. Here are some pull requests, merged pull requests from CoreFX and CoreCLR. So for example, there's really tiny changes that I bet any of us could have implemented, like fix Turkish I casing with invariant culture on Unix. Cool. Probably, you know, not a lot of code. Reduce allocations in a numerable block. So some really small things, some really small optimizations, maintenance fixes, feature additions, alongside with larger things, such as what I've already mentioned, just a few days after this whole thing was open sourced, there's a person, Mr. Jeff Norden, who contributed OS X support. Basically contributed build and other fixes that were necessary to build Core CLR on the Mac. So let me show you just the general experience for this. So again, the build process, the build process itself takes a while, so I'm not going to run the actual build. But the outputs, the binary products, are pretty similar. So you have core run, for which is the runner application. You get lib core CLR, which is equivalent to core CLR DLL. You got MS core lib DLL. You have SOS, and so on and so forth. So it's basically the same components as on Windows, except, you know, dynamic libraries on the Mac. And Hello CS is a little app that, you know, just prints hello, also creates a thread, you know, just to see that this whole thing works. So you compile that source using Mono, using the Mono compiler, because the C# compiler, Roslyn, was not yet ported to the Mac. It's coming really soon, I'm told, but presently you have to use Mono. So I've already built, and I'm just going to do core run, hello exe. And this is our app running on the Mac as well. And I could also take that hello exe from Windows and run it using core run. So you don't need to actually compile on the Mac to run on the Mac. You don't need to compile on Windows to run on Windows. It's just that right now you can only compile with the Mono compiler on the Mac. So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts, but the workflow generally works. Occasionally, when I have to give a talk and there's a lot of accumulated updates, I do waste a few hours on, you know, getting the build process right again. But it's a project that is really ongoing, so it's not anywhere near production quality at this point, but it does show you a direction, an idea of what's coming. So we're really close to, you know, sort of wrapping this thing up and having a good picture. But first, let me just tell you what the cross-platform story here is. So I've already told you that Roslyn, the compilers, are not yet supported on Linux, are not yet supported on the Mac, just on Windows. ASP.NET 5, which, again, one of its major propositions is that it's a cross-platform story as well, similar to .NET Core. ASP.NET 5 currently can use .NET Core on Windows. On the Mac, it uses Mono. On Linux, it uses Mono right now. But the transition to .NET Core is coming. .NET Core and Core CLR had initially support only for Linux, but people contributed support for the Mac, support for FreeBSD, and some other platforms as well. So it's not like it's easy or anything, but it does show that the source code is relatively portable. And it is indeed possible to port it to other platforms and also other processors like the ARM and not just x64 by Intel. And so going forward, we will have .NET Core and the runtime and the compilers available on all platforms, and we'll be able to mix and match what you build where and where you run the produced binaries. And I think if we had this whole story in 2001, when the .NET framework was first released, when Microsoft truly couldn't care less about making things cross-platform, if we had that thing in 2001, I'm not sure Java would be where it is today. I, for one, feel that C# as a language, the .NET framework as a framework, the CLR as a runtime, I personally feel are superior to what you have on the in the JVM world. But the ecosystem around Java obviously is very compelling, and the fact that Java runs on so many platforms. Microsoft with .NET Core are now have a long way to go to get to the same point, but they're really working to, and they're really making steps, I think, in the right direction. How stable is this thing? I've already told you, it isn't stable whatsoever. Again, it can take a while to just, you know, tinker with all the moving parts to get them to work even a bit, but it is maturing. So you now have detailed build instructions. You have detailed contribution guides, developer guides. There's a lot of material now that Microsoft provide along with the community to help people really get up to speed and contribute to this whole project. So in terms of major takeaways before I answer any questions if you have, .NET Core is mostly the server subset of the .NET framework. So it doesn't have stuff like WPF, but it has most of what people refer to as the .NET framework, most of the server stack anyway. The .NET Core and the CLR itself have been refactored to NuGet packages. So you now have a NuGet package for collections and a NuGet package for threading and a NuGet package for link and for XML and so on. And you can do uplocal .NET app installations. So your app ships with whatever .NET components it needs, including the runtime itself. So you can have multiple custom versions even of the runtime and the .NET Core on your machine. For this project to be successful, I think Microsoft believe as well, that community participation is absolutely critical. And the first year has been pretty decent in terms of community participation. There's a lot of people actively involved. You and I really have a chance to influence the way the .NET framework is going to look like going forward, to influence innovation, to influence directions in which Microsoft is going to take this whole thing. So, you know, as soon as the whole porting process completes and this stabilizes, there's going to be a lot of thought on what to do next, what new features to build. Should .NET expand into some other kind of processor or maybe some new APIs for, I don't know, actor-based frameworks in the cloud? The answers to these questions, what the direction is going to be, will largely depend on contributors. And so I know that not every one of you is going to port the .NET framework to another platform, but you do have a chance to make smaller contributions first and to participate in design and to influence directions, which are really, Microsoft is really trying to make decisions in the open now, which is part of making an open source project successful. So we have a few minutes for questions. I just want to say that if you'd like to discuss this any further, if you'd like any of the examples, please feel free to follow me on Twitter. I'm going to put the whole thing, including the slides, of course, online. The session was recorded, so if you want to come back to anything, just like any other session, you can definitely do so. So do you have any questions, friends? Yes. What's that? License, right, MIT. what it means is, well, it's a really short license. I'll show you the license. So permission is hereby granted free of charge, blah, 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 to deal in the software without restriction, including the rights to use, copy, modify, merge, publish, distribute, sublicense, and sell, as long as the copyright notice is included and you understand there's no warranty of any kind. So it's not GPL or anything viral like that. It's the one of the friendliest open source licenses, and I license everything under MIT as well, whatever I put on GitHub. Yeah, so you can take your MS Corelib, modify it, not open source your changes, ship commercial versions, sell them, you know, collect data on your users maliciously. Yes, yes, you can do that. Yeah. I know exactly what you were thinking. Okay. Right, so the question is about the time frame. I am not involved in the process. It's actually moving at a slower pace than I expected when they first announced it in 2014. I can't even guess. I hope during 2016. The CLR is pretty much there, like the whole thing. Some parts of it are really hard for contributors to get into, like the GC, it's really a not really elegant C++ code from the 90s, but it's all out there. For the .NET Core, it's not yet all there, which is really a limiting factor, yeah. Well, if you do come up with any questions, then please feel free to ask and approach and stay in touch if you'd like. I hope you enjoyed Tech Days, and thank you very much for coming. Thanks.